Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Scales of Truth. I'm Tyson Harley. Well, you know, since the beginning of the year, this is only my second, I believe it's only my second episode. So onward and upward. I don't know if any of you guys have ever had just kind of a personal situation that can get you down where you feel like you or others around you are being bullies. And, you know, you have to kind of deal with the devastation of a human treating another human that you care for not well. Well, I'm in one of those situations. And at some point I said to myself, I am not going to let myself become a bully, another victim of the bully that's bullying my loved one. And so with that, I have been doing better overall. But one thing I haven't gotten to, and I'm trying to round back, for instance, I've gone to the gym more. I'm not going to let myself, you know, not have good self-care because of this bully bullying my loved one. And so, you know, think of that. You know, when they, the idea that they'll talk about, some people will say, and I'm not saying this is the right approach or not, that when they lose a loved one to some awful person, that they have to just release their resentment towards the perpetrator, because otherwise they themselves kind of became a victim of the perpetrator. Now, I'm actually not releasing the resentment. I'm holding on to the resentment because I'm going to use it for fire. But for me, it's more that, listen, what they're not going to do is get me down. So I've been going to the gym, doing a lot of things. But as far as from the podcast perspective, it seems as though I've not done a lot. So I'm going to do a follow-up here based on a WorldNet Daily article. Let's see here if I can find this. A WorldNet Daily article pointed out a study that finds spike proteins are a key post-vax problem. No kidding. We had said over and over again back when I had the Facebook videos and here on this podcast and on Kim's podcast that we knew that the problem is that, you know, one of my most popular episodes is where, you know, the cure creates the same problem as the problem, the spike proteins. But don't worry, they behave. These ones behave. Don't you worry. And so here we are getting to the very same idea. So from this article from WorldNet Daily, study finds circulating spike proteins a key post-vax problem. I decided to look into and kind of re-look at the nature of the spike proteins and the mechanism, rather, of the vaccine. So I want to cover just a couple of things from these two articles. One, study finds circulating spike proteins a key post-vax problem. Two, trends in molecular medicine, an article called Adverse Effects of COVID-19 Messenger RNA Vaccines, the Spike Hypothesis, from April 20th, 2022. And then also a piece together that, if you recall, at some point you can listen to a few episodes I had fairly close back to back about a year ago or so. And also my year in review for 2022 talked about it, where I realized the lipid nanoparticle is probably a major, the adjuvant of the vaccine, where you'd have some stories talk about there is no adjuvant, and another one saying, well, actually, the adjuvant's the messenger RNA with a lipid nanoparticle. So we have some coverage here where they admit it in one spot that I was right on, and that's this adverse effects of COVID-19 messenger RNA vaccines. And then maybe one other article I might delve into briefly. So I won't make this super long, but it won't be super short either. So this first article I mentioned from WND is reviewing a medical study, the title of which is Circulating Spike Protein Detected in Post-COVID-19 mRNA Vaccine Myocarditis. This is a Massachusetts General Hospital, Harvard School of Medicine. And they looked at boys and girls with a myocarditis to try to understand this situation. So what they found is that these subjects that had myocarditis and were hospitalized with it had the large quantities of free circulating spike protein generated from the vaccines, while control subjects without myocarditis did not. So again, what my hypothesis is on this is that, remember, the mRNA gives instructions. It doesn't go to the nucleus per se, but it goes to the protein building factories of the cells. And so I said, it's not a computer code. It doesn't say, and count to 10, and then once you hit 10, stop. So the concern is over the bell curve of the mass, you know, various reactions among humans, what is the worst case? What about people who, for whatever reason, for any number of reasons, might overproduce these spike proteins? Because the spike proteins are the problem in COVID itself. And so why did we have the vaccine of all the proteins that they could have used that were common to spike to COVID-19 and some of its related coronaviruses? Why would you use the one that is the problem? Well, they did. And then the question is, if you're making the vaccine make the body create the spike proteins, well, what about the ones who produce the most? Won't they be victimized by this potentially? And here we go. It turns out that the people with myocarditis, all those hospitalized, had large quantities of free circulating spike protein generated from the vaccine, while control subjects without myocarditis did not. Hashtag Tyson was right again, because he applied basic common sense to the known facts, right? Remember, I've told you these studies, on the one hand, way over here, and this is going to be very interesting because we're going to touch on nanoparticles too, which I applied common sense to, where I said, oh, on the one hand, it says, yeah, nanoparticles can create autoimmunity. They're so small, the body doesn't know how to deal with them. They cross the blood-brain barrier. They're bad for you. You'll find articles where they say graphene is bad as a pollutant in the environment. We're going to have to be careful how this is going to be dealt with in the future, because they make nanoparticle graphene so much for computer manufacturing and stuff. And they say, man, if this gets out, this is bad stuff. And then on the other hand, you'll find that, other studies going, yeah, graphene would be a great idea for adjuvants and for drug carriers, just like the other nanoparticle metals are. And so you'll find that we get to this idea that these tiny metals that are in there to create a greater general immune response are also really bad for you. Like the studies say, when they're looking at only as an environmental pollutant aspect, instead of cheerleading about putting something new that they can call new technology into as a drug carrier or as an adjuvant. So back to this idea of just vastly different responses. Like, why is it that some people created a lot more of these spike proteins? Well, that was the point. You don't know. The bell curve exists for a reason. Quintiles exist for a reason. Yes, many middle three and in the middle quintile It's a significant number, but the variance in reaction at the extreme ends of the quintiles on a bell curve is hugely different. It's just like anything in human nature. There are people who, when they get fast, they can still only run an 8-minute mile. When they're in incredible shape and in the same age group, you have people that can run 3-minute and 55-second miles. It's just, it's vastly different across a wide population. So if you don't do the studies to understand the differential responses, then you are really, really introducing massive risk when you're just going to throw it at billions of people. And I just love how this says, check this quote. Immunoprofiling of vaccinated adolescents and young adults revealed that the mRNA vaccine-induced immune response did not differ between individuals who developed myocarditis and individuals who did not. So in other words, the vaccine such as it is, I mean, I don't know how they measured it, but, you know, so they've got a, quote, immune response because of, you know, the protein at least trying to mimic the protein in the alleged virus. And I say alleged because I don't know that they match very well. It's, you know, before you put the virus in, the dead virus, and you know it matches because you used the virus. And now you have to be like, well, what if we just try to create instructions that created something like the spike protein? Oh, look, we got this great immune response. Is it the immune response to the actual virus, or is it the immune response that you're seeing because that's kind of related because of the vaccine-induced spike proteins? So they go, oh, yeah, we got a lot of immune response, but the deal is the people with myocarditis got massively larger amounts of free spike antigen detected in the blood. Let me finish that quote. Detected in the blood of adolescents and young adults who develop post-mRNA vaccine myocarditis, advancing insight into its potential underlying cause. You think maybe the thing that is massively inflammatory is maybe the cause of the myocarditis, that is inflammation of the heart? Oh, remember, no, it'll stay in your deltoid. Remember that lie? It'll stay in your deltoid. It's like, no, it won't. And it didn't. And we found out very soon it didn't. And still, you know, it reminds me of when you have diets and there are people still pushing certain diets, even when and pushing the old science for those diets, when other studies have clearly come out that said, yeah, that was bad. That was bad data. This is at least the nuanced, new knowledge of that situation. So yes, advanced insight into its potential underlying cause of myocarditis. Huh. Could it be the spike proteins that the vaccine makes the body create? Crazy, right? Here's another thing about this, and it says, oh, no, all adolescents and young adults mounted a substantial immune response after vaccination, conferring protection against SARS-CoV-2. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to see the specific, like, where they came to that, because is it really that you're saying the general immune response? I mean, this talks about it, but, I don't know about that. Oh, remember this? Well, I've only discussed this 2 years ago. What? Multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children? No way. Multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children is a side effect. Yeah, we discussed this, remember? Multi-system? Yeah, because you're making the body create a massive inflammatory substance, a massive amount of a substance that is irritating to all the tissues of the body. Now, here's the crazy part again, because you shouldn't beta test on a population. A WND says, here's is the key point. The spike protein they had in their bodies had evaded the apparently sufficient library of antibodies from the vaccine or previous infection that were supposed to neutralize it. Thus, it is possible that some persons do not make specific neutralizing antibodies after injection, and thus the spike protein is able to circulate and damage the body, specifically the heart, muscle, and possibly other organs, including the brain. Bullcrap! Okay, listen, I'm going to give the clue here. The idea that the body did not have the sufficient library of antibodies to deal with the spike protein may be around the idea that it's coming from a human cell. And so it confuses, remember, this autoimmunity issue. And then this part about may damage other tissues, including the brain. No, remember, the issue here is that the adjuvants are nanoparticles made of nanoparticle-sized metals that are so small they can cross the blood-brain barrier. And when it's a drug carrier, that's considered a benefit of it. They want it to. They're trying to throw these nanoparticle drug carriers into your brain so it can go stop a function in your brain, and they call that working on depression. But in reality, it's poisoning your brain with the nanoparticle metals. That's what's really going on. Now, there might also introduce those drugs that just are inhibitors of some kind for brain function. That's basically all the antidepressants do, is inhibit some function in the brain. Don't pay attention to its side effects, because just imagine, just because you say, yay, hey, you know what? If I stop the wheels, one out of four wheels from turning on the car, then that means we're only using, you know, three-fourths as much rubber. It's like, well, yeah, but what are you doing with that wheel? I mean, there's probably side effects there. What's going on? Is it running on its rims? Is it, you know, what are you doing? Let's just stop the wheel. Well, actually, that doesn't work, because now you're just burning the rubber off and you're going slower. So this idea that, oh, we'll just stop off. We know this thing that supposedly applies to this one specific narrow area, and so we'll just inhibit that. You really think there's not a chain effect from all of that? Okay, so from there then, I found an article too that was called Adverse Effects of COVID-19 mRNA Vaccines, a Spike Hypothesis, from April 20, 2022. This is in Trends in Molecular Medicine. So this is what's funny, because, you know, I told you they're hiding the terminology here. It's here as a highlight for this article. It says the same thing the other one did, basically. Hey, yeah, these vaccines induce massive, robust immune responses. Well, do they? Because if they do, then how have you admitted you're just as likely or more likely to get COVID-19 after the vaccine than before? I feel like your study immune response is different immune response than the specific immune response against regular COVID-19. But anyway, that just like the other article, it says, hey, and this induces massive immune responses against severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus too, sure. Yet the cellular molecular mode of action and the etiology, the induced adverse events, remain elusive. So here we go, just admitting the adverse events up front, whereas before we didn't even mention it. Okay, next paragraph. What did I tell you in the other episodes? Lipid nanoparticles might be, and probably are, the adjuvant, even as in some articles they go, oh, no, there's no adjuvant in this, don't need it. Yeah, you do, because you have to induce a general immune response too. That's the whole idea. If you don't induce a general immune response as well, then it's like the specific immune response doesn't get the accelerator pressed on it, if you will. It doesn't get big enough. Like the body has to be woken up enough to the threat in order for it to decide to build the new library based on the specific threat. Lipid nanoparticles probably have a broad distribution in human tissues and organs. They may also, along with a packaged mRNA, exert a pro-inflammatory action. Guys, this goes exactly with what I was saying. The lipid nanoparticles, in some cases, could be graphene. It seemed that's what they were going for. We found the articles where they were like, oh yeah, graphene, maybe a great idea for adjuvants and drug carriers. But there are still questions. And of course, we haven't done it yet. Definitely haven't done it yet. Nope, haven't done it yet. And I told you, graphene is another irritant because it is a nanoblade. That's literally how they describe the graphene, a nanoblade. It's rigid. It is incredibly thin compared to its width and its length. It is like a razor blade in a tornado, is what it is. And depending on your circulatory system, it is going to cause all kinds of problem in whatever tissues it hits. Now, how long it sticks in a certain spot, then goes to another, I don't know. This is saying basically the same thing. It isn't saying spike proteins anymore. Listen to this. It's not just saying the spike proteins. It is saying liquid nanoparticles probably have a broad distribution in human tissues and organs. They may also, along with the packaged mRNA, exert a pro-inflammatory action. You think? All right, check out this one too, this paragraph. There's an intermediate one where they say, hey, maybe the spike protein comes off of the cell. If I remember, the mechanism is that it makes a spike protein on the outside of the cell, the human cell that it just hijacked the protein factory for, but it's supposed to kind of stay there. But sometimes it sheds, sometimes it leaves that cell and becomes free floating, if you will. COVID-19 mRNA vaccines encode a transmembrane SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. However, shedding of the antigen and or related peptide fragments into the circulation may occur. No, it does occur. But now listen to this one. Binding of circulating S protein to angiotensin converting enzyme 2, ACE2, or to other targets, along with the possibility of molecular mimicry with human proteins, may contribute. ACE2 was a major term in talking about the virus itself. Again, going through the idea of, well, why did you mimic the problem with the virus, with the vaccine? You could have any part of the night. Okay, in order for the system to see that the tiny, night is inside, it has to see some part of the night. Why don't you use the helmet and not the sword? Why'd you use the sword? You could have used the helmet, you vast fool. You could have used the boot. You could have used the chest plate. Why did you use a sword, you freaking idiots? This one's interesting, and it's hard to understand because, again, unless you read the whole thing, you're just a little confused since you're not in the industry. Binding of circulating S protein to angiotensin converting enzyme to ACE2, again, that's the term that's all over the documentation on COVID-19 itself. But it says that, quote, parentheses, that is critical for the renin-angiotensin system balance or to other targets. The binding of the S protein to ACE2 or to other targets, along with the possibility of molecular mimicry with human proteins, may contribute to the vaccination-related AEs. So the molecular mimicry with human proteins is concerning. I don't know if that means an autoimmunity aspect. They just don't speak as directly as they could or should. And again, when you find some people saying, hey, we did a, what is it? The little study where they get the frequency, basically they get a frequency reading that goes along with, what materials inside something. That's very simple. They get a readout and they you can see it's a big spike in a certain area. If it's, and then identifies what type of stuff is inside it. Very easy. Just can't think of it. And remember when people said, man, per what you call it reading, it is, gosh, it's a molecular something. But anyway, it's some kind of a frequency response type of a thing. So you can see what's allegedly in the thing. It says, man, it seems like it's 90% graphene. And I said, well, it might be because the mRNA may not take up very much of it. And they're just using the graphene as the drug carrier. In essence, just calling a drug a vaccine. In essence, putting graphene with messenger RNA tied to it like a drug carrier into blood serum previously. Recall on my previous episodes, I said that articles admit that if you put a nanoparticle into blood serum outside of the human body, like just separately stored or separately a separate vat, if you will, of blood, then you will get a lipid sphere around it, and literally it looks, and coronas, you'll get it will get coronified. So to make the Trojan horse of the vaccine, they simply put, most likely, this was my previous hypothesis, that knowing that they've admitted in the journals that a drug carrier nanoparticle put into blood serum then gets coronified, that's really all the vaccine is. Messenger RNA on the drug carrier lipid nanoparticle then has the lipid around it that gets coronified, and that was the theory. And here we go, right here. They kind of repeat things again. Oh, of course, vaccines are incredibly important. However, the adverse events which have been noted may relate to a pro-inflammatory action of the lipid nanoparticles used or the delivered mRNA, as well as unique nature, expression pattern, binding profile, and pro-inflammatory effects of the produced antigen, the spike S protein, or its subunits, peptide fragments in human tissues or organs. It's insane, people. Truly insane. It's exactly what I've been saying this whole time. Now, here's another admission. This is what you do. You find people admit things when they're not being directly challenged. It's just a ridiculous scumbag a part of human nature. So this is very interesting because they go, oh, well, listen to this. Well, this has resulted in millions of deaths worldwide. But nevertheless, for the majority of COVID-2 infected individuals, it will remain asymptomatic or only mildly symptomatic, something we've been telling you for 2.5 years. And then it'll say, and this is more important, listen to this. COVID-2 may also circulate in the gastrointestinal tract, but being a respiratory virus, the virus itself or its related antigens will not, in most cases, impact tissues or organs other than the respiratory system. But what are we getting to when we said, is the solution worth the risk? They just told you, in almost all cases, it will not impact tissues or organs other than the respiratory system. Now, why are they saying that? Because the solution impacts all the tissues practically. Multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children. Multiple systems inflamed because spike proteins, because nanoparticle carriers that are nanoblades. Again, I'm assuming some of these graphenes are the actual adjuvants. You don't find easy admission on that. Maybe some article has finally admitted it behind the scenes now, and I just haven't found it yet. You did not find easy admission of that back when I was looking a year ago. Oh, yeah, my memory just jogged. The ACE2 was mentioned as we were looking at the various studies from the overseas gain of function research that seemed to be related to coronavirus at the time that such gain of function research was actually not even allowed. And so when it wasn't allowed, they took it overseas, the big funding source that everybody knows about. November of 15th, they were publishing articles and they were talking about ACE2 in a gain of function of virus. And it mentioned ACE2, and this is right here it goes, hey, as far as the virus, and sometimes if somebody gets a bad enough case of it after the infection of the airway and the lung tissues, it may cause excessive inflammation, and then the acute respiratory distress syndrome may lead to organ damage beyond the respiratory system because of micro and macro thromboembolism, and so on and so forth. And then they say that might be due to the broad expression of its receptor angiotensin converting enzyme 2, ACE2, in several cell types and tissues. So again, just a blast from the past, because when we are looking at these articles talking about ACE2 in gain of function research, it overlapped with what we knew COVID to supposedly do, supporting then the gain of function research. Surprise, surprise, could have been the real source of, there's other reasons to think this, but we went straight to the articles and found, well, there it is, ACE2 right here. Over here, I hear about COVID-19 and they talk about ACE2. Here, we see it again, talking about ACE2. Here's another thing we've told you for 2 years right out of this article, talking about the risk for severe COVID-19 increases significantly with age or pre-existing comorbidities, and younger individuals have a substantially lower risk. The thing we've been saying, Kim and I, this whole time, even compared to influenza infection for developing severe COVID-19. So an admission right here that there was science behind it, as we told you. And just to repeat, when you heard early on, because some of us were paying the F attention, in mRNA vaccines, which are characterized by relatively rapid prototyping and manufacturing on a large scale, the spike protein, that they shorten it to S protein, because I think, honestly, they just don't want us to hear spike all the time. You go, wait a second, I thought that was the bad part. The S protein encoding mRNA is delivered via lipid nanoparticles, LNPs, to human cells that produce the mature viral protein or related antigens. I don't know what the related antigens are. And then they'll go over that, which can exhibit a rather wide tissue organ distribution. That's what we told you guys a long time ago. And they said they'll discuss that later. They have a figure one, again, adverse effects of COVID-19 messenger RNA vaccines, a spike hypothesis. I can't tell if that's the rest of it. I've scrolled down a little bit, but that's the beginning of the title, in Trends in Molecular Medicine. And the point here, again, is they have a nice figure that goes, oh, look, here comes the lipid nanoparticles. And then look, it does all the stuff inside and it creates the spike proteins. And then they hang out on the membrane, the outside membrane of the human cell, at which time they might possibly go into, you know, come off and go into just circulation. And yet the cell itself is continuing to create spike proteins. Literally, the figure itself has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 more, 17, you know, over 20 shown. And some of that might be the, they're trying to show the flow of it. But even so, even on the outside of the cell, or on the cell membrane itself, it's got 7 or 8, and then shows that some of them go, oops, oh, they fell off the membrane. And so then they're free forming. And if the cell continues to create them, then more of them are available to fall off, becoming free floating, freely available in the blood or whatever tissue is infected by the lipid nanoparticles. Transfected is a word. That's hilarious. It's not infected, it's transfected. Oh my gosh, listen to this. Exactly what I've been saying regarding the idea of across the broad potential reaction for any number of reasons, maybe because of, is somebody in their growth phase? Are they particularly healthy? What is their gender? What are other factors involved? What if somebody creates a lot? And what happens if they create a lot? So, blah, 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 I'm going to give you a quote. And after it does this, and this is explaining what happens inside the cell. And then it says, S protein acquires its final position in the transfected human cell membrane, where S1 is exposed to the extracellular space. That is, it may face circulation. In other words, it comes off and can freely circulate. Okay, let's listen to that again. S protein, that spike protein, acquires its final position in the transfected human cell membrane, where S1 is exposed to the extracellular space, i.e. may face circulation. In other words, it may come off the cell membrane. Although the extent of antigen expression per cell remains unknown, hello, that's exactly what I'm saying. Exactly what I said 2 years ago, once I understood the nature of it, you're telling the cell to continue to create spike proteins? You're hijacking the protein factory inside the cell? Well, how do you know how many it'll create? How do you know if it'll create 1,000 or 10? How do you know? Although the extent of antigen expression per cell remains unknown, it is reasonable to assume that this process results in rather extended decoration of transfected cells with S protein. Translated, it's reasonable to assume that a lot of them are made, and therefore many of them are available to fall off, if you will, into free circulation. Guys, I can't even explain why I'm as smart as I am. I mean, I'm being facetious there, but only partially. Like, it was in the... It was in the articles. It was in the journals. It's in the documentation. Create it. Just keep creating it. How much? Don't care. Just create it. We're going to make billions off of this. Just create it. It's good enough. It's close enough. Does it create it? Remember the big thing was, hey, it creates an immune response. But what about the side effects? Fuck the side effects. It creates an immune response. Here we go, continuing. Furin-mediated, whatever furin is, furin-mediated proteolytic cleavage, as in plop, cut it off, comes off, as in SARS-CoV-2 infected cells, in the absence of a mutated blah, 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 blah cleavage site, may result, may result in shedding of cleaved S1 and conversion of S2 into its post-fusion structure. Okay. In other words, it's saying, yeah, maybe we understand why it's coming off the cell. But couldn't you have guessed that it might? Couldn't you have guessed that? Oh, yeah. Let's just do all the research after. I wonder why this is happening. Well, could it be that you jackasses did a beta test on something that is creating spike proteins and you don't know how many it'll create? And since it's going to the outside of the cell membrane, that maybe some of it could come off and that could have been an issue that you should have foreseen or at least not smack down people when they talked about the concern of it? All right, and remember when I told you The mechanism is so far different as to be insane. I told you, the regular vaccines are self-limiting. Your body literally can't get more than you get given. It's a self-limiting factor by how big is the dose, right? It doesn't go, hey, just keep creating how many, boss? And then the boss never hears them, so the cell just keeps creating it. How many, boss? Well, I haven't heard back. Just keep creating it. Keep creating it. All right. So let's listen to this quote. As delivered mRNAs can theoretically trigger the production of distinct antigens that can distribute systemically, they are radically different than conventional platforms, i.e. inactivated whole virus vaccines, or even protein subunit nanoparticle vaccines, where the produced antigen and its distribution are more predictable. Ding, 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 ding! I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know what to tell you. An entire industry of jackass, purposely naive people have less wisdom than an individual not making any money off of looking into it at all, just trying to be more careful and thinking through the analysis of it. I told you guys this. For 2 years. Hey, as delivered mRNAs can theoretically trigger the production of distinct antigens that can distribute systemically, they are radically different from conventional platforms, where the produced antigen and its distribution are more predictable. Do you mean more predictable because you have a quantity already, you jackasses? And this one, you don't even know what the quantity might be because you never finished the research. In essence, this is admitting, along with the other article we talked about, that apparently in some people, the spike proteins just get massively overproduced, which was my point! In this article, then, they also cover some other types of vaccines, one of which, surprise, surprise, just remember conspiracy theories, conspiracy theorists, it's not gene therapy! Okay, well, let's look at this. Other types of COVID-19 vaccine. In viral vector vaccines, yes, protein coding information is delivered via replication-deficient adenoviral vector system that contains an encoding dsDNA. Okay, but don't worry, we get more. Just when you're reading complicated stuff, be patient and continue to read. And then try to just think as you're getting further context as you go. Because next sentence, in this case, transcripts from adenoviral vectors are generated in the cell nucleus. Remember, it doesn't go into the nucleus. It doesn't go into the nucleus. Well, some of it goddamn does, because it's right here. Other types of COVID-19 vaccine. In viral vector vaccines, the S protein coding information is delivered via a replication deficient adenoviral vector system that it contains an encoding dsDNA. In this case, transcripts from adenoviral vectors are generated in the cell nucleus. I forgot what I just said. Gene therapy. It doesn't go into the nucleus. Yes, it does. Sometimes it does. Some of them do.
You conspiracy theorist.
Hey, remember when people said, wow, there sure seems to be a lot of, we've looked under the microscope and here it is in the microscope. There seems to be a lot of contaminants in here.
You conspiracy theorist. You shut up and take your vaccine.
Same article. Apart from the S protein itself, AEs can also be attributed to background expression of remaining adenoviral genes. We're still talking about that other version of vaccine. Or to persisting adenovirus vector DNA in a transcriptionally active form. Further concerns are the presence of other contaminant proteins, remnants of the vaccine production line, or into pre-existing anti-vector immunity. Contaminant proteins.
You conspiracy theorist!
Now, to my theories back when I was talking about nanoparticles as drug carriers and so on, and therefore, in essence, if nanoparticles, which they are used as drug carriers a lot in current medicine, and specifically, I shouldn't say specifically, but as an example, as antidepressants drug carriers, where they think it's good to deliver some crazy crap into your brain and to pass the blood-brain barrier. Then I said, but it really seems that they, in essence, do the same thing with vaccines, and they just call it something different. Here we go. In protein subunit nanoparticle vaccines, so this is not mRNA. This is protein subunit. They're taking some part of the virus itself. So in other words, rather than whole dead virus, there's another type of vaccine where they take some subunit thereof and say, that's good enough. We don't have to put the whole thing in here. We'll give people part of it. And that will be enough for the system to catalog some part of it. Remember the helmet versus sword analogy I said earlier. So that's the protein subunit nanoparticle vaccines. So now we're no longer talking about mRNA. But in explaining this, and they give an example, NVX-CoV-2373. The S protein is harvested in a cell culture system, purified and delivered as a trimer? I don't know what that means. Via a nanoparticle assembly in an adjuvant. Exactly what I said. I told you drug carrier, nanoparticle as drug carrier, just called something different, really not that far removed from being the exact same thing, because they say you cannot have a vaccine without an adjuvant. But before we'd always said, well, what is it for? Oh, it's just to deliver a general immune response. No, it's not. It's to deliver it. Just like a regular drug. It's just to deliver it. It's just another pharmaceutical. I'm going to let you listen to that again. The S protein subunit, okay, not the whole virus, the subunit, just a spike protein part of it. It's harvested, it's purified, allegedly, and delivered via a nanoparticle assembly. Delivered via a nanoparticle assembly, drug carrier, in an adjuvant, a nanoparticle adjuvant. Amazingly, they go, although preliminary trials indicate that these vaccines can trigger robust immunity, reports on adverse events are still scarce due to the limited amount of vaccination data. Or there's a lot fewer adverse events because we already know how many spike proteins we're going to deliver. and we can't have an overgrowth of spike proteins in the body. This part's garbage here. So then they mentioned conventional vaccines. Some part of it's garbage. I'll tell you which. The whole virus is inactivated and inoculated using an appropriate adjuvant. Okay. So they got an adjuvant, but we've said they had have adjuvants in the others. They've talked about the nanoparticle adjuvants. I know right now there's no problem with that, but I'm going to get to that. That's why I mentioned it. A significant benefit is that whereas in the previous discussed technologies, the S protein is a sole source of the immunogenic epitopes. In this case, a wide repertoire of epitopes and other viral proteins is presented. So what did I tell you? It's this idea. It's this. What if your body is not trying to recognize Tyson because of his nose, but it's given a larger description? So if it sees Tyson again, it has other characteristics to recognize Tyson and be prepared for him to do his whatever, you know, his a ninja routine to get into the place. Okay. You know, it's gait, you know, it's arm to leg ratio, you know, it's general size, you know, it's eyes, you know, it's mouth. You don't just know its nose or whether it's carrying a sword. All right. So that's what that means. A significant benefit is that whereas in the previously discussed technologies, the S protein is the sole source of immunogenic epitopes. In this case, a wide repertoire of epitopes and other viral proteins is presented. So if you could present, so there's your admission that you didn't have to use a spike protein. You could have used any number of these epitopes in other viral proteins. And you just decided to use the biggest risk factor, the biggest harm for some reason. Now, the part that I have a little trouble with is here. Possible disadvantages of conventional vaccines, that is, include lower immunogenicity. I don't believe that. Why would it be lower when you're giving it more epitopes to go off of? You're giving it more more identifications to go off of. Why would it be lower? If anything, it would be broader because you're showing so much of the vaccine, I'm sorry, the virus, then some of that is going to be similar to other variants of the same virus because variants share a lot of characteristics among each other. So if you show all the characteristics, it means your immune system will have a broader catalog that therefore also applies to many different variants. Hello? Hello? So they say a lower immunogenicity production. Lower immunogenicity and production issues. Okay. AEs due to used adjuvants, aluminum hydroxide. So this is an alleged possible disadvantage. We already know they use adjuvants in the other ones. So why are they saying AEs due to used adjuvants here might be the disadvantage? Unless they don't mean relative disadvantage, as well as issues that relate to incomplete inactivation of the virus. So remember when people, you know, you'd see some person with their face paralyzed and we're supposed to ignore that person and the wild insanes act like someone's making it up. Here it is. Although rare, AEs include serious clinical manifestations such as acute myocardial infarction. That's called a heart attack. Bell's palsy. Cerebral venous sinus thrombosis. Guillain, I don't know how to say that. Barre or Barre syndrome. Myocarditis, pericarditis, mostly in younger ages. Pulmonary embolism. Stroke. How many of those are related to circulation systems related to the idea that these spike proteins and or the artery pasta we've talked about in previous episodes being in the circulatory system, either the spike proteins, if you will, scuffing up the side of the walls of the arteries and or the tiny blood clots that you see in blood samples eventually going downstream and causing strokes and the like. So many of these are spike protein circulation related. And, oh, you're not going to believe it. Oh, my gosh, you're not going to believe it. I look at journals, and it turns out the truth is in the journals, and I tell you about it. Talking about nanoparticles in autoimmunity. I've mentioned it here multiple times. I've told you I have an episode on it. And what's one of the things that's listed right here as the AEs? Autoimmune hepatitis and autoimmune peripheral neuropathies. Autoimmunity. We already know that the mechanism for autoimmunity with nanoparticles is because the metals are so small, unnaturally small, they bind too tightly to the human cells themselves, and therefore the system does not easily see the difference between human cells and the metals that are bound tightly and gets it mixed up and starts to think itself is other. We know the mechanism for this autoimmunity, it is literally nanoparticle based, fueled. And I want you to hear again then, wait a second, so this article's going ahead, well, good for these people, they're admitting it. Now, you're not going to get it in, you know, Pfizer's not going to say it. Pfizer can go screw itself. Pfizer, through due process, of course, deserves to be put up in smoke. Okay? That Borla is right up there with Demon Fierce as far as his level of evil and of negligence at the very, very least. But he's so consciously pushing all this that I think it rises above the above the level of mere negligence. So, but let's listen to this. Listen to this. Apart from adverse effects or events documented in clinical trials, most of the syndromes or isolated manifestations have been reported in multi-center or even nationwide retrospective observational studies and case studies. This article is recognizing this is widely observed. It's not a myth. It's not a wives' tale. I'm going to read it again. Apart from adverse events documented in clinical trials, most of the syndromes or isolated manifestations have been reported in multi-center or even nationwide retrospective observational studies and case series. And I'm not covering it here, but there's another one that was really important recently. It may have been like a Cleveland Clinic, but it was reporting likelihood of getting COVID before or after vaccines and then boosters. And this was among the hospital system's employees, and that it was actually higher based on those who got more and more of the boosters. So that's another good center-wide observational study. Now, remember then the same article talked about how likely young children are to be asymptomatic. And here we have this part, and here they admit, I mean, this is, again, I don't lie to you, people. I know you don't. I know you don't. You're not saying I do. But I'm just going to emphasize that I do my homework. Some vaccine, the same article that said, oh, it's very rare in children to have any kind of significant event or even just young adults, younger people. Same one, same article. Some vaccine-induced AEs, e.g. myocardial infarction, Guillain-Barré syndrome, were found to, and again, I don't know the pronunciation for that, were found to increase with age, while others, myocarditis, anaphylaxis, appendicitis, were more common in younger people. So again, the risk profile, if you will, was highly dependent upon age as opposed for the benefit to risk ratio. They've literally told you that some of these things, the risk of the vaccine was much higher for, or is higher for younger people, observationally higher, statistically significantly higher, when the likelihood of severe COVID-19 was very low there. Oh my gosh. So So they talk about the various AEs briefly, talk about some studies and complications, and they go, we postulate the molecular basis of these AEs, adverse events or adverse effects, remains largely unknown. We postulate that since most, if not all, of them are also apparent in severe COVID-19, they may be related to acute inflammation caused by both the virus and the vaccine, as well as in the, wait for it, common denominator between the virus and the vaccine, namely SARS-CoV-2 S-protein. Interesting, am I right? I mean, not long ago, I talked about the parallel between the 1980s phenomenon with fuckface Fauci and how the very solution created the actual problem that was the initial problem, which is destruction of the immune system. The quote solution destroyed the immune system. In this case, I talked about the parallels because there that same fucker is. And in the same case, he says, take the solution. It's safe. You should do it. You should do it proactively and preemptively. Oh, the solution creates the same fucking problem as the problem. So here we go. We postulate that since most, if not all, of them are also apparent, that is, adverse events, also apparent in severe COVID-19, they may be related to acute inflammation caused by both the virus and the vaccine, as well as in the common denominator between the virus and the vaccine, namely the SARS-CoV-2 S-protein. And a blast from the past, when we did look at those old articles on gain of function, as I recall, they also mentioned spike proteins. All right, so further down in this article, again, I just don't know what to tell you. When I tell you things in plain language, it's because I figured them out. Okay, so when I tell you, it's like, okay, spike proteins are causing damage to what is supposed to be a highly smooth surface, the inside of your circulatory system. Think of just traditional, if you're getting deposits on the inside of your, you know, your fat deposits, you're getting constriction and blockages in your arteries. Part of the thing is that it's likely that those things stick to where you have damage on the blood vessel walls. So listen to this then. In the section in the same article called the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein-induced effects in mammalian cells or model organisms. Listen to this. It's saying the exact same thing I've just told you, and I've told you many times before. Reportedly, intravenous injection of the S1 subunit, so purely only the spike protein, in mice results in its localization in endothelia of mice brain microvessels. Mice brain microvessels. Not good. Now, what's endothelia? Endothelium is a single layer of squamous endothelial cells that line the interior surface of blood vessels and lymphatic vessels. So we're talking about circulation in blood. So again, it results in localization of an endothelia of mice brain microvessels, showing co-localization of blah, 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 blah. And it was thus suggested that endothelial damage is a central part of the SARS-CoV-2 pathology, which may be induced by the S-protein alone. Exactly what I told you. You're roughing up the surface in an elementary sense. You're roughing up the surface of a surface that is supposed to be among the smoothest in the body, purposely hyper smooth, because circulation without buildup is so important. And instead, we're roughing it up with free flowing spike proteins. And honestly, one wonders when I can't remember where this came from, but what I've told you before is they say that the blood is different in people who've had the vaccine, or maybe also it's different in people who've had severe COVID-19. But remember, severe COVID-19 is not creating a free floating spike proteins in the circulatory system. It might eventually get there, but it's not like the body's been told to produce it from cells. So what was I going to say about that? Now I've forgotten. Give me a second. Oh, I think I remember what it was. It's that I actually don't think that's what it is. The spike proteins in the virus itself are not circulating. They're already attached to the thing they're supposed to be attached to. They're all a part of one, you know, mechanism, if you will. They're not just spike proteins that have, you know, kind of meandered out onto a cell surface. It's a part of it. So it's more likely to stay together and not get into the form of free floating unknown numbers of this free floating spike protein. So yes, in essence, what we said, it's damaging to the, on the one level, forget the nanoblades. Forget the nanoblades, it's the vaccines. Just the spike protein itself is damaging the insides of blood vessels that are supposed to be hyper smooth. Well, I'll tell you what, you read this section of talking about just the specific spike protein, all the various things it does to screw up in many different ways and many different mechanisms to screw up the endothelial cells, which is important to our circulation being proper and not having clots and the like. Even one down here where it says it even directly induces coagulation. And it just reads like a lot of people are suggesting, you know, the biological weapon that it is. It's pretty crazy. And as we say that, I'll tell you another thing. China is not having a sudden COVID-19 surge. That's wildly nonsensical. Something else is happening there. They're exposing their people to toxins, or they're calling it COVID and going and putting them in, they're intubating them or something. They're not dying wildly of COVID-19 3 years later. That makes zero sense. That is not what's happening there. It's just tyrants being tyrants, tyrants who believe in a lower population, getting rid of dissidents. There's no way there's a COVID surge 2¾ to 3 years later. And by some measures, remember the parking lot studies that was in September of 19, for instance, October of 19. By some measures, it's been over 3 and a quarter years now. There's no chance. There's zero chance. I'm just telling you, zero chance that whatever's happening in China is a surge of COVID-19. And if Australia is stupid enough to believe that, then, you know, again, through due process down in Australia, they need to get rid of their leaders. Because their leaders might be right back towards, you know, this lockdown of basically China proportions in Australia. It's embarrassing. As a semi-Western country, treating their citizens like that, it's honestly embarrassing. Knowing that this is a fairly complete journal that covers a lot of things, I really can't recommend this article enough, although of course it's some dense reading. So if you're not like me where you can get context that seems not accessible just by being patient and continuing to reapply context as you read to what you've already read, maybe it's not as recommended for you. But let's listen to this sentence. Finally, as we essentially do not know for how long and for what concentration the lipid nanoparticles and the antigens remain in human tissues or the circulation of poor vaccine responders, the elderly or children, see outstanding questions, we'll probably go to that too, and given the fact that cellular immunity likely persists despite reduced in vitro neutralizing titers, boosting doses should be delivered only where the benefit-risk profile is clearly established. Well, remember what I tell you almost all the time, marketing leads science. Here we have somebody going to specific saying, yeah, boosting doses, not a universal thing, should not be a universal thing. Well, that's not what the advertisements say, is it? The advertisements say, get your boosting doses, get your boosters here. Step right up. It's one of their semi-conclusions here also. Moreover, the use of alternative chemistries for lipid nanoparticles and of S-protein in the closed form, not prone to ACE2 binding, along with the use of SARS-CoV-2 nucleocapsid protein, or solely the SRDB, may be valuable alternatives for refined next-generation mRNA vaccines. This reminds me so much, again, of the parallel with the AIDS thing, where they said, hey, you know what works better so people don't die of the solution? We don't give them as much. We give them something else. But we still say it was okay to give it to them. But turns out they die a lot less frequently when we give less toxic material to them and instead replace some of that with not toxic stuff. As here they go, hey, well, you know, what if we just did a different type of S protein, or maybe just not give the S protein? Maybe that would be a valuable alternative. Of course, there's nothing wrong with S protein. At least that's what the marketing will say, right? To include the spike protein in the vaccine. But maybe we give a different version of it. Now, remember when I talked about the lipid nanoparticles and the problems that it binds so closely with the human cells? And even as we talk about the graphene and how it's a nanoscale razor blade, like, so how do we know how easily it gets out of the body if it binds so tightly with the cells that that's a known mechanism by which it creates autoimmunity? So look at some of the outstanding questions here from this article. What are the localization pattern, transfection efficacy, and clearance rates of the mRNA vaccine's lipid nanoparticles in the human body? Yeah, good question, right? Can we refine lipid nanoparticle chemistry towards retaining transfection efficacy? So in other words, it gets into the cells, it takes over the machinery. And at the same time, assuring on-demand tissue distribution. So apparently they mean, we only want to go to the tissues we want it to. Yeah, sure, buddy. Good luck there. Do the adverse inflammatory... But remember, that's the same question as the drug carriers. The drug carriers, the whole idea is that we're going to get it to where it's supposed to go. And I don't know how... You know, science always acts like it's got a lot more figured out than it does. I don't know that they really have it nailed down well, but that's the idea. That's the idea for drug carriers. Instead of just giving a general nutrient to the body so the body's more healthy, no, you have this to deliver to the certain tissue to deliver the certain almost always inhibitory effect. Almost never beneficial, except in the sense of you're blocking something, and so some side effect of blocking it is what you identify as good, and the rest of the side effects of blocking it are just a side effect that we don't need to talk about too much. I mean, we'll you know, spit them out at 300 words per minute. But the side effect of inhibiting that we want is the desired effect. And the side effects of inhibiting that are bad are the ones that we spit out at 300 miles per hour, 300 words per minute. Can we refine LNP chemistry towards retaining transfection efficacy and at the same time assuring on-demand tissue distribution? Do the adverse inflammatory reactions noted post-vaccination also relate, and if yes, to what extent, to lipid nanoparticles and or the mRNA used in the mRNA vaccines? Why wouldn't it? You vast fools. Artery pasta. Hello. Why wouldn't it relate to that? Because remember, it didn't cover what happens if some of the mRNA instructions get cut a little bit due to all the transportation and the temperature requirements and so on and so forth. What if they're only partial instructions by the time they get into the body? Well, a lot of more questions here as well. I think some of them they kind of answered mostly. Does the antigen cross the blood-brain barrier? I don't know about the antigen, but yet they talked in earlier, I didn't discuss it, about some mice studies that seemed to say that it did. Oh, boy. So what I say, remember what I told you some time ago? I didn't know this, the boosters against the exact same virus, but we're many, many variants along. Why would we imagine the booster? The booster is not it's not updated. It's not, you know, a virus software update, if you will. It's not paying attention to their latest developments. It's the same one. Now, the newer boosters, maybe not. But the first 1 to 2 doses, at least, all you're doing is getting the same vaccine again. It wasn't an update. Hey, all right, we got the newest, the latest, and greatest. We're up to date. You're not up to date. You're not up to date. That's what I said as soon as I found that out. And so here's one of the outstanding questions. It is the case that vaccination-mediated immunity, 2 doses, against the used ancestral antigen, Wuhan HU1S protein, wanes over time. Vaccine-mediated immunity, 2 doses, against the used ancestral antigen, wanes over time, lessens over time. Or do we simply partially lose protection due to evolutionary leaps of the S protein, e.g. at the Omicron, for example, at the Omicron variant? In that case, do we really need boosting doses of the same antigen? Exactly my point. Oh, my Lord. Exactly my point from when I said, holy crap. And then I've talked about it since. Of the booster is the same thing? Why, Borla, you little son of a bitch. The booster is against the exact same alleged threat. The exact same one. You better get your booster so you're up to date. I'm not up to date. And specifically still reacting to something that by your own admission has varied and varied and varied since then. So why would I assume it's just as effective? Never mind that we found out that it wasn't as effective. Yeah, great article. Another great acknowledgement. The authors received no funding for the preparation of this opinion article. I got to say, that's a great article. Let's see. No competing interests related to this opinion article under the Declaration of Interests. All right, let's see here. References. Great references. I really like this article. I'm interested in who the authors were and if where they come from. We have an Ioannis Trougakos, who is Department of Cell Biology and Biophysics at the Faculty of Biology, rather, at the National and Kapodistrian University of Athens in Greece. So good on that person. We have an Evangelos Terpos, also at the University of Athens. Looks like a similar background there and affiliation. This is another Greek-seeming name. Harry Alexopoulos. And again, University of Athens. The National and Kapodistrian University of Athens. Man, outstanding work by these people. Same Efstathios Castritis, same affiliations. And I imagine the rest of them are too. They all look like Greek names to me. Every single one of them. About another 5 that I didn't mention. So great work by these folks. Absolutely outstanding work. All right, guys. A little bit longer than I'd hoped, but definitely an interesting updated article. Really good. And I say update. It's actually from 6 months ago now. July of 2022. It says Opinion, Volume 28, Issue 7 of Trends in Molecular Medicine. Let me just look at this volume. Yep, Trends in Molecular Medicine. It's funny that the show more for this volume, the highlight is excessive exposure to metals has been associated with aberrant neurodevelopment. Neurodegenerative diseases and is thought to be a prominent group of environmental risk factors and neurological disorders. On pages, whatever, Kim et al. Review recent advances in our understanding of the role of manganese as a pathological contributor to neurodevelopmental and
neurodegenerative diseases. Interesting. And yet we have our adjuvants and drug carriers that are these metals. I'm not saying it's manganese. Just pointing that overlap out. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. I will chat at you later. Boy, I got a wintry mix coming here in the Sunflower State. I wonder if I'm going to be stuck inside tomorrow. Yeah, it's not going to happen. Besides that, I can work remote. So I get the hours regardless. Have a good one, guys. Thanks for listening.